Whether you're headed to a baseball game or a concert this summer, or just anxiously awaiting football season, SeatGeek has you covered. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. I actually have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. In fact, I've done that recently when I caught up with Eric Carabel, my good old podcast buddy, at a minor league game. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Obviously all in on Glover the Monster, right?
Well, he is near to being relevant, but far from being the closer.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday. It is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. I am Tristan H. Cockcroft, and yes, it's a busy day, a busy weekend ahead. We've got lots of information here, and as always, we've got Anthony Colati pushing the buttons behind the glass, but there's no editorial watchdog today. So I'm really glad that I have AJ Mass joining me today as my co-host for the day. AJ, this is a great day. I've been waiting for this the whole year. I'm glad to have you here because, you know, like, we can break all the rules. There's no watchdogging going on. I'm going to go out in the rain without an umbrella. I'm going to run with scissors. You know, I'm going to drop Sergio Romo in the office league and nobody's going to notice. And you know what? Most importantly to me, I can finally declare officially, without any question, that a short rib grilled cheese is both a grilled cheese and a sandwich.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tristan. I didn't hear anything you said just there. There's a moth in my ear. Hang on. We're going to have to take a timeout for me to get it out.
Wait a minute. I got to check the rule book. Let me see if a timeout is allowed here. I'm not sure about that. Oh, you know what? I'll allow it. Today, anything goes. So let the wackiness begin, and perhaps we'll let the wackiness begin with the buzz. Let's start with some good news here. I like talking about the positives. Let's, you know, make it nice and upbeat, AJ. What do you say?
Sure.
Let's talk some Rougned Odor, hottest player in fantasy baseball in the past week. Pretty impressive performance he has so far. Recently, he's topping the past 7 days split on our player rater on ESPN. And he did have a decent June. But since then, you know, he's been even better. In August, 357, 486, 929 slash numbers. Obviously, that's why he's at the top of the list. And the thing that struck me about him, since the All-Star break, he has walked 9 times. Now, 5 of those were in one game, but 9 times Rougned Odor has walked. So, Rougned Odor, do we need to talk about him again as a top 10 fantasy option?
I don't know about top 10, but certainly, you know, he's one of these streaky guys. I mean, in terms of the stolen bases, he gets caught way too much. You know, he'll go 10 games without even making an attempt. Then he'll go 10 games where he, you know, goes 50%, but he'll have 5 steals over that time. And then he'll go another 10 games where he doesn't try anymore. So in terms of that, if you catch him on the week when he's running and caught stealings don't count against you, then, yeah, I'll bump him up. But, you know, I don't think that he's anything more than a 265, 270 hitter overall. But the power is legit. So, you know, I think if you're looking for a 265 hitter, 25 home runs for a season, I think that's what you got with him. The batting average, I think, is unsustainable. He's just hot right now.
Now, the thing that strikes me about Odor is that the wide split between the value to me and the rotisserie leagues and the points-based leagues, I'm not surprised to hear you say that you're not jumping to the top 10 rating for Odor. I think in the rotisserie leagues, the case is a little bit easier to make just because he gives you categories that are more valuable there. And his poor plate discipline. Yeah, the 9 walks. Yeah, the 5 walks in that one game. I get it. He's really not a patient dude. I think we know this at this point. But despite the fact
and with a 25% strikeout rate, he's in that neighborhood all the time. So it's like leagues, that negates one hit each game. It right off the bat,
Often higher than that, too, to your point about the case. Yeah. Often higher.
Yeah. He's got to get 2 hits to get rid of the strikeout. And if he strikes out more than once, you're looking at a negative day more often than not.
For the year, top 20 at this point in fantasy points accrued, despite the fact he missed 31 days on the DL. I mean, he missed a good full month's time. He's still top 20 in fantasy points, but in rotisserie leagues, he's 12th among second basemen at that position. So 20th in points, 12th in rotisserie. There is a little bit of a split between him, but a nice pickup in performance, and a pickup in performance by his teammate, the guy who's second on that list of the best players over the past week, is Joey Gallo. He's 3rd in home runs in the majors since the All-Star break with 9. That's behind Matt Carpenter's 12, the good Chris Davis from the A's, 11. And he's 5th in the majors in homers since the beginning of the 2017 season. So Joey Gallo, another guy we've got some batting average questions there, and perhaps a divide between the points league and the rotisserie value, where I think now you are the one who might like him better. Thoughts on Gallo?
Well, the thing is like you get, especially at this point of the season, where there's so little time left, if you can get teams while they're hot, that gets their value even more. I mean, I'd even go for, a guy like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, because he's doing so well in this hot stretch. It's like short term, I'm looking at these guys. And so I'm not as concerned with worrying about keepers and what do I do next year? And, oh, my goodness, I have, Mike Trout. Should I bench him? Yeah, obviously you play your studs, but if you're looking at these guys who are under-owned, who have them maybe in cold streaks, if they're getting hot right now, put them in your lineup. We're all playing DFS right now.
Kiner-Falefa, catcher eligible. As a matter of fact, a good buddy of mine who knows a lot about this fantasy stuff, he does pretty well in our home leagues, didn't realize he was catcher eligible, the backup catcher for the Rangers. So that's a nice little added note. So good name to drop in there. Third on this list of the hot players here, we mentioned on Monday, that's Shohei Ohtani. He had another combo meal. Can you believe that?
Hey, it's a combo meal.
Now, we talked a lot about him already, but I just wanted to get the name on there for the fact that he did this well in the past 2 weeks or so. He's doing quite well as a hitter, and he's ramping up the throwing and everything. By the way, 5 stolen bases for Shohei Ohtani this year. First pitcher, and I'm sorry, I still call him a pitcher. He might be pitcher in DH since Bob Gibson back in the 60s. Pretty incredible.
I mean, this guy is, if he can be a regular starter, and I think next year perhaps you don't maybe glove him as much once the season gets going and he goes through a full spring training and they start him on a 5-man rotation. I mean, how is this guy not a second rounder minimum if he's going to be doing this at the plate and throw the pitching on top of it?
Yep, if he's going to get those DH games 2 to 3 times a week plus the starts, he's going to get a good minimum of 1. Maybe they even ramp it up next year. We'll see. Yeah, to your point, I like him a lot in Dynasty. I think that's where a lot of the value comes from. So since we talked about some trivia-related stuff, I mean, that Ohtani thing was, maybe that was a geeky stat, I don't know, but there's more trivia. Let's go with the trivia here. I got a question for you, AJ.
Sure.
Let's get trivia. In the past 40 days, 3 players, all pitchers, of course, have met these minimum thresholds. 55 strikeouts, a 3.25 ERA, and a 1.1 whip. They've all met those, or bettered them. Who are they? Two are easy and one is tough, and I'm trying to get to the third one there. So the first two, you should know one very well, very dearly. You watch him pitch a lot.
Yeah, Jake. Zero wins, right? You said 0 wins? He got a win. He got a win, finally.
I was trying to get quality starts into this one because he's got 7 quality starts going right back to that June 30th date to cover the 40 days. Yeah. The other one is an American League pitcher who just happened to pitch in the World Series last year. You might have heard of him.
Who could he be?
I wonder. A guy who got a ring last October.
You're asking me to remember who won the World Series last year?
Yeah, I know. It's so long ago. You know, just scratch that from the books. It doesn't matter anymore. That's right. Justin Verlander is the second one. The third one is pretty tough, though. And, AJ, I'll give you the giveaway here. He threw an immaculate inning yesterday. Or was it yesterday, or was it the other day? It was.
If you're talking Herman Marquez.
Herman Marquez, yeah, all these games kind of bleed together when we're doing the Monday and Thursday thing. Yes, yesterday, Herman Marquez threw the immaculate inning, which MLB.com's Thomas Harding noted it's the first in Coors Field history. Herman Marquez has met all three of those qualifications. Now, barely so. Granted, it was a 3.15 ERA for him. The whip was just a little bit beneath that, and he had exactly 55 Ks. But I want to mention Marquez here. And, AJ, we talked about the Rockies and the schedule, a lot of home games coming up. But two of the pitchers who I think have been doing better lately are the ones who have the more electric stuff, and that's Marquez and John Gray. Whereas we talked about guys like Tyler Anderson, Kyle Freeland, to a certain extent, Antonio Senzatella, Chad Bettis at times were road matchup plays. What are you doing with Rockies pitchers?
Well, it's tough because it's still Coors Field, but at some point, we've got to get over the fact that these pitchers are pitching Coors Field when they're pitching there on the regular. Once a guy starts showing splits at home that are at least tenable for fantasy, I don't even care if it's the home road thing. It's just like, are the home splits something you can live with for fantasy? I think certainly you have to consider using them and expecting that to be the norm. I think pitchers do get used to pitching there if they're pitching there regularly. And when there's more games, like you say, going forward at home versus on the road, I think it's even more likely that you'll get some momentum at home. So I'm not as afraid of a guy who's in Colorado and is used to Colorado.
I definitely, there's times where they're going to be useful. So to your point, I'm with you, AJ, on that. Kyle Freeland, by the way, 2.18 ERA in the home games this year. Pretty impressive by him. Tyler Anderson, 3.65. John Gray's is 4.58, but is pitching better lately. And 73 Ks in 59 innings there. Herman Marquez is the one who's been showing the very wide home road split. So this is encouraging, the fact that he's doing this well with six quality starts over seven games during this span I just mentioned, that
yeah,
he is doing well.
You know, the other thing, you know, let's face it. Strikeouts are strikeouts. It doesn't matter where you're playing. It's not like the Coors factor of the, you know, the air being thinner and everything. If they don't hit the ball, who cares? Strikeouts are real.
Rank the big four for me that, I mean, in the points league especially, I think that's where the Rockies have the best value here, where you can just go for volume, where the negatives don't really hurt you as much as the ERA and whip in a rotisserie league. Rank the four for me, the Gray, Marquez, Freeland, and Tyler Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, Gray would be my number one there. I'd say Marquez second, Anderson third. That's how I would go with them there. Freeland last.
I could get behind that. I'm a little concerned about what Anderson's been doing lately, that I might put him fourth behind Freeland. I'd probably go back and forth between the two. But, yeah, I would go that same order. I think Gray is the guy to get at this point. You got to get on board again. You know, I'm going to get fooled again here. Just watch.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, there's not a one of them do I have confidence on a day in, day out yet. But like I said, you know, especially if, you know the run support's going to be there. So if you're just looking, you know, if you're looking for wins, and I know you don't chase wins, but a Colorado pitcher at home, used to the environment, versus a guy coming in, maybe even a rookie for the first time in that environment, the run support should be there. And so if all you're doing is chasing wins, you have to hope that the ratios don't get blown up.
So let's do some quick hits on some injuries here, just a little updating on things. Mike Trout with a wrist issue, had a cortisone shot on Monday. The thought is he should be back by the weekend. Often the cortisone shots take about 3 days or so, give or take. It can sometimes be quicker or a little bit later. We mentioned Trout on the show on Monday. Any update to concerns, encouragement for him based on a projected return?
No, like I said, I do think that, like I was saying before, like we're all playing DFS now at this point, because there's not a lot of time left in the season in terms of the regular season for most fantasy leagues. You know, we said on Monday that if you're worried about Trout, don't start him this week because it's an all or nothing thing and it might not be worth it. So I think in general going forward, I think just take everybody on a day by day and play matchups even with the superstars, because that's what we're down to at this point of the season.
Agreed with that. Look, it's a frustrating thing. I've got him in a league where I started him this week, and I hate losing those games. But I did adjust a little bit of my rankings accordingly, and you're right. It's something we got to deal with. I'm not in a full-out panic. Joey Votto. He's missed three of the past four Reds games with a knee issue. Any concerns with Joey Votto?
I am, because he doesn't look right. I mean, I was watching the Reds against the Mets, and you know, after not playing a few games, he went in there, and he couldn't run. He couldn't feel. That's an issue. And, you know, they say, oh, he's just sore. I'm concerned because he doesn't look good. And the fact that they risked playing him and put him in the lineup and then said, you know what, when he's not, now he's not going to play afterwards, it's tough.
Josh Donaldson with the calf, an update on his issue. He's resumed his baseball activities. He's going to be ramping it up to sprinting workloads in the next few days there. The Blue Jays are interested in getting him back because they could throw him through the waiver process and attempt to trade him still before that August 31st playoff roster deadline. Any interest there with Josh Donaldson?
I mean, I might take the chance to stash him. I'm not going to play him or put him in my lineup with Toronto. But I do think that if he ends up getting moved, I'll instantly consider it. I think there's, like you said, they're going to showcase him. If he is at all healthy to make it to the field, they will showcase him in the hopes of getting some return for him. But I'm not going to take that. I'm going to say once he's proven that there's a return there and goes somewhere else, then I'll consider it.
Those are the two I agree with you, AJ. I'm worried a little bit about Votto Donaldson. I've moved him down a fair amount in my ranking, so I'd agree with that. We'll see how this plays out. I'm kind of the pessimist these days, I think, on him. Well, you know, I think we'll get to another little tradition we do here in the closer chart. But I hear rumors we have a special guest. Somebody might have heard that we're causing a little trouble here, you know, snipping the tags off the mattresses and stuff. So we got to be kept in check. Let's do the closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
With that, we're going to welcome in our special guest for the day. I hear Kyle Sapi is back with us. And
that's right. And I come carrying breaking news. We've got Super Grover. We've got an appearance in the Washington area. Super Grover has been recalled from AAA, averaging over 11 strikeouts with a sub 11 strikeouts per 9 with a sub 2 FIP during his 8 innings in AAA. He's been recalled to the Nationals and is here to take over the fantasy industry.
Excellent. I like it. Yes, Kyle, thank you for the update on that one. Quality breaking news drop for that. So AJ, we are obviously all in on Glover the Monster, right?
Well, he is near to being relevant, but far from being the closer.
He might be the next in line, though. That's the thing that really struck me about that is that Dave Martinez said that he might get the occasional save on Ryan Madsen's days off, and then he immediately mentioned that Madsen might need some workload maintenance and a couple more days off than your typical closer. Ryan Madsen, just to give everybody the update on this one, the true closer for right now for the Nationals. Sorry, Kyle. The true closer for the Nationals right now. Kelvin Herrera ended up on the disabled list with a shoulder issue. We know that Sean Doolittle is currently out on the DL. He's starting to work in his throwing again and might be back in the upcoming weeks, probably a couple weeks from now. But Ryan Madsen's the guy. But Glover, next in line. Do you have any interest in either of these two pitchers? Do you have any interest in Madsen?
I don't really have any interest in Madsen. You know, like obviously he's going to get the first save chances that are there. So again, struggling for saves, certainly. Yeah, you pick up the guy who's in the role if that's all you're looking for. I like Glover just because of the fact that now is the time to load up on setup men who are just going to get you multiple innings a week, perhaps, and get you the quality counting stats, not kill your ratios. But I'd rather roll with the setup men than a streaming fifth starter who, if they happen to have a bad outing, all of a sudden you've lost ERA and WHIP for the week.
He definitely would be one of the better ones for holds, I think. An interesting arm, does throw hard. He can occasionally touch 100 miles per hour, so definitely keep an eye on that. And yeah, we're not just doing that for Kyle, although thank you, Kyle, for stopping by. Popping in here from the Fantasy Football Focus, the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast. Yeah, if I could get that right there. I'm breaking all the rules today. Definitely listen to that. We have that live stream on Twitter going for that too, Anthony, on each day, correct?
Absolutely.
Excellent. So definitely check that out. Great show that we have going on there as well. And Kyle does awesome work for them as well as for us. Let's get to the other closer stories here. The Marlins. AJ, we talked about this on Monday. Kyle Bearclaw, not pitching so well, and it finally happened. He lost the closer's job. Don Mattingly says that he's out. In fact, Barraclough did pitch in a low-pressure situation yesterday, did not pitch that effectively, and in his stead, it will be a closer by committee, which will be primarily led by Drew Steckenrider, but could also include pitchers like Adam Conley and Javi Guerra. Any interest in any of the three or all?
Well, you know, on Monday I said Steckenrider is the guy to grab, and so certainly I hope you already acted on that. Yeah, like I said, I think these first-in-line guys, committee, you know, let's assume Steckenrider's the guy for now, and Conley, a first-in-line guy, is someone I would consider there. I'm considering all the guys who are giving you a bunch of holds, who have a K to BB rate around 3.5. So, you know, you look around the league, you get your Archie Bradleys, you get your Adam Ottavinos, you get your Tommy Hunters, you get your Amir Garretts and Alex Colomés. Like, these are the guys you want to load up on. Rotate them in like one or two roster spots and just forget about streaming, and I think you're better off at this stage of the season.
Still trying to find Drew Steckenrider's available percentage here. I know it is greater than 80%. Kyle Barraclough has dropped down to 17.4, and I still can't even find Steckenrider. That means he's clearly out here. Yes, he is out here in 95.1% of leagues. I'm with you. He's got great stuff. I think it is closer-esque stuff. If he does get a chance to shut down a game and he gets it, I think they will turn directly to him. Houston's bullpen. Hector Rondon gets back-to-back saves on Monday and Tuesday. And that was with Roberto Osuna on the active roster. So how do you see the Astros bullpen playing out?
I think it's playing out how it's going to play out. I think that Osuna is probably going to get some chances there because you can't throw Rondon out there every day. But I think as long as it's working, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I think this is kind of what you're going to see for now. If Rondon starts to get overworked, certainly Osuna is going to get some safe chances in there on those other days, but he's still the go-to guy, and I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be going forward.
I'd agree. I think that the Astros are a matchups-oriented bullpen, so they're going to stick with Rondon in the hot hand for now, and yeah, you're right. Osuna probably will be worked in, and if Osuna outpitches Rondon over the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whichever, maybe he gets moved in and gets the lion's share of those saves. Last guy I want to throw the name out here for, AJ, is Ken Giles, who had a disastrous outing the other day. On Tuesday against Boston, two outs recorded, four hits, five earned runs, two home runs, and after that, because Giles hasn't looked like the official closer for them, they're hinting at it, he doesn't look like the official closer, was this a blip, or are you concerned?
I mean, it's not good. when you change environments and suddenly you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you know, that's your first impression or amongst your first impression, odds are you're not going to stay there too long. It's again, we always say that the closer job is subject to managerial whim. And if all the manager has seen of you is garbage, then how is he going to rely on you?
Yeah, in this case, it's been very difficult to get a read on that Blue Jays bullpen. They've had much inconsistency where Ryan Tepera, I think, has been their most effective reliever for the year. We'll see how this plays out. You're right. It's not good. It's not good. It's not a good ballpark for him. As a guy who put in a lot of shares on Ken Giles, he was cut in many leagues after the trade. I did put in a couple of shares on him. I'm concerned. I am concerned.
Yeah. Not good.
Not good at all. Not good at all. Obviously, nobody wants those stats. All right, let's get to Mike Fiers. We're looking at some of these waiver trades. We saw Tyson Ross, Jordan Lyles get dumped by the Padres. In this case, Mike Fiers did get through waivers, or maybe he got claimed by the team that traded for him. Oakland picked up Mike Fiers in a trade for two players to be named later or for cash considerations. Then Fiers had a pretty decent debut for the A's on Wednesday. For this season, the number 45 pure starting pitcher on our player rater. That means he's in the top 50 of our player rater. Very impressive. But the big concern I have, AJ, is just not a lot of quality starts, averaging 5.7 innings pitched per start. And he has 10 quality starts for the season. So he's outside the top 50 in the former in the innings per start, and the quality starts is outside the top 40. But is there any additional value here in Oakland?
Well, you know, we are talking about a guy who gets to that 90-95 pitch count really early, and to your point, I mean, July 2nd was the last time that he threw more than seven complete innings. So it's six innings, six and a third. So the margin for error there when he was with Detroit certainly was not very great. And he like you said, the quality starts just aren't there because he's not lasting long enough. One mistake and suddenly he's not getting there. I would say that, you know, the change of scenery is good. To be in a winning environment is good for him. Certainly that's going to heal a lot of woes on his behalf, but I don't think he's like much more than where he is on the player radar going forward. I think he's definitely a guy who will benefit from a better win possibility, but I'm not looking towards him at all in terms of anything more than maybe a matchups play.
I'd agree with you on the valuation point with the, using the player rater. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to repeat that. I think what this does with the move is that it eases the extreme concern of regression. I think it is going to make it a little easier for him to stick close to that. But I agree with you. I think he goes backwards rather than forwards. But I think he absolutely warrants being mentioned. I think he might not have in Detroit had he stayed there. That's something to watch. I want to get two notes in on minor league players. Eloy Jimenez, there's a report that Eloy Jimenez could be called up to the majors within the next several days. However, he did, I believe, miss Tuesday's game in the minors with the flu or an illness of some sort. So that was the reason we haven't heard any update on this since Monday. Slashing 338, 388, 599 in AA and AAA combined, and his weighted runs created plus of 173 is top 20 in the minors. AJ, are you adding him right now?
I am, because I think this is the type of player who can give you two solid weeks coming in, and that's basically all we're looking at right now. That's all that's left in the fantasy regular season. So I think this is a guy who, once he gets the call, is going to be in the lineup every day. And certainly, you know, when you're looking at these minor league players, you see they're not in the lineup, immediately you think, oh, they're not in the lineup. Have they been called up? And like, you know, so it was almost like a false alarm when everyone's like, oh, he's not in the lineup. Oh, he's got the flu. But yeah, I'm looking for guys who are getting the call prior to September 1st, because that means that they're going to play every day.
Agreed. Once he's up, he's here to play. He's in the right park. It accentuates power. And this is one of my favorite prospects. Watch this guy play a few times in person, and he's got an all-field approach, all-field power as well. I love the prospects like that. JD Martinez is the guy I always throw out there as one who has tremendous opposite field power. I think Eloy could do maybe not quite to that level, but he's balanced there. I definitely would be adding him. Jacob Nix of the Padres, a 184 ERA and 10 starts combined between AA and AAA. Had a bad 2017, has rebounded nicely. And the Padres, having cleared out their rotation recently from some waiver cuts, they've opened up spots for some rookies like Brett Kennedy. But Nix is the one who I think is pretty interesting. Are you adding him?
I'm not adding him, and the reason is, it again, like I said, pitching is a lot more scary for me in terms of when we're talking about a guy coming up. I don't know whether or not there's a book on him with, you know, depends who he faces. Do they know him? Are the players on the team? Is it a younger team? Like, you have to really analyze that sort of thing. You know, we've had a lot of situations this year, especially with the Reds earlier this season and the Cardinals, you know, where these younger players are coming up and they have really strong first starts. And then suddenly, no, they do not do that a second start. So you're really gambling on just there not being a book on them that first time out. I'm not taking that chance at this stage of the season.
I think that the Petco Park thing is going to drive a lot of people to add Nix. Now, I've been taking out some pickups on him, taking some shares in NL-only leagues, the deep leagues, just speculative, throwing darts. Beyond that, I can't go much further because the K rate isn't there. So I agree with you, AJ. I think that this is somebody to watch, but I want the name on there because I think he could be an interesting guy in a couple of weeks. Padres have done a pretty decent job with getting some of those young pitchers set up right away. Let's get to the weekend schedule here. And we got a great question on Twitter to kind of tee us up here, AJ. So we're going to do the schedule a little bit differently. The question was, there's plenty of innings left before I hit my limit. Can you highlight a streamer type of pitcher that stands out for each day when previewing the weekend? So AJ, you and I will each throw a streaming candidate for each of the days as we go. And we'll start with Thursday. Thursday, the game start at 1:05. So hopefully you got your lineup set already. But the ESPN Plus game, it is Rangers at Yankees. It's Ariel Jurado at J.A. Happ. Actually, it would be J. Happ, but I'm calling him J.A. Happ for now. making his second start for the Yankees, coming back from the the hand, foot, and mouth disease coming back from the DL. Apparently should be fine for this one. And Hap, I like the matchup here. As a matter of fact, he'd be one of the ones I'd throw out there as a potential matchups candidate for this game. Could pitch well like Lance Lynn did in the Chicago game. We didn't even get to that one. But does he stand out to you or does somebody else?
You know, this is not a very heavy schedule today, so I would think that he's probably the only option that I'm really looking out there. I mean, you might want to take a chance that David Hess against the Rays, but it's a very tight slate here. It's full of a lot of more of your stronger options. So there isn't a lot of streaming to be had.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out who would be the backup guy to Hunter Wood in the Rays game. It's often tough to tell, but in occasional circumstances, they tell you in advance who it is. So I'll see if I can look that up after we are through the show and tweet it out or something. Friday's game start at 2:20. It's one game during the day, Nationals at Cubs. The ESPN Plus game at night is the Dodgers at the Rockies. It is Kenta Maeda versus John Gray. Your thoughts on this or a streamer, AJ?
Yeah, I think we've kind of just had that whole conversation about Coors Field and John Gray. So I think definitely someone to look at there in terms of, is there anyone else really? I mean, Blake Snell scares me coming back from injury.
Mike Minor gets Yankees at Yankee Stadium, which is a tricky one. I
maybe
normally say
Felix
him.
Pena. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. But that's about it, yeah.
Shane Bieber probably still out there in a decent number of leagues, like that game at Chicago. I also like the Zach Eflin game in San Diego. I think he is about 50% available in ESPN leagues. That's another candidate I would consider for fantasy there. Zach Wheeler's still out there in a decent number of leagues. Great matchup in Miami. I think he's probably been spoken for. And the other is Anthony DeSclafani's been pitching pretty well. I think he probably will be one who stands out. Friday's a pretty decent day for streamers in that 30 to 50% rostered percentage for ESPN leagues. Saturday, the game starts at 1 o'clock with Red Sox at Orioles on ESPN+. Plus, it is David Price against Yeffrey Ramirez, the first game of a doubleheader for the two teams on that day. I'm going to guess neither of those is going to stand out as a streamer, AJ, but your pick for Saturday?
Actually, I would consider, if I look at the starting lineups for that one, because obviously since they're playing two, if they decide to go with giving the major lineup the rest early, I might consider Yeffrey Ramirez in that one just because it's a B lineup kind of situation. So there's a possibility there, but I need to see whether or not they rest the starters for game one or game two. Otherwise, I'd look to see whoever's in there for game two and maybe consider doing that. Beyond that, Flaherty against the Royals certainly stands out to me. I don't want anything to do with Matt Harvey. there's so much loaded into that statement, isn't there?
Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. As a matter of fact, since you said Trent, Matt Harvey,
good play though.
How about the Mets Marlins game? How about both pitchers?
Dan Straley absolutely stands out as a pitch for me.
I think Corey Oswald has pitched pretty well there. And if you're in the deeper leagues, if you are really just trying to grab anything out there, I don't think Corey Oswald is that bad a play against Miami. Oh, that's not the doubleheader day. They have a doubleheader day the next time Oswald's turn would come up, and that's Matt's spot, would come up in the rotation, so we'll see about that. The other is I'm going back to Lance Lynn, going back to the well here. Not as good a matchup in a home game as it was in Chicago, I think, but it's still facing a somewhat lighter offense. The worry is we mentioned Gallo and Odor before, so Lynn's not as attractive here as he was the other day, but he's looking very good lately. I think he could be a streaming candidate. Sunday's games, they begin at 1:05 with a couple of games there, including Red Sox and Yankees are playing games at that time. But on ESPN Plus, at 4 o'clock, we've got Pirates at Giants. Jameson Taillon against Derek Rodriguez, who's been pitching quite well lately. Are you on board with Derek Rodriguez?
Yeah, I'm somewhat on board with Derek Rodriguez. I think he's done pretty well. And, you know, the Giants are probably the last team in the tier of wild card potential, but a really long shot. And I don't have him in my top 50 just yet, but he's darn close. And that's saying a lot for a guy who pretty much was on nobody's radar when the season started.
I think, AJ, were we the ones who discussed him, or was it with Eric last week? I know he did come up. We went in depth about Derek Rodriguez on the podcast, and he's doing very well with what I think are somewhat limited skills, just doesn't miss enough bats and isn't extreme enough with the ground balls, but he's in the right park for what he offers you. Yeah, we got to take him seriously here. He definitely would be one of the better streamers for the day, no?
I think so there. I think certainly whoever ends up starting for Seattle, if it's not King Felix, is someone I would be interested in looking at, because obviously we've been talking about how depleted the Astros lineup is with all the injuries. And obviously Felix, has, after the horrific outing he had, although the matchup with Beltre was delightful to watch, he might not be in there on Sunday.
I do a lot of hunch picks at this time of year. You know this, AJ. I do just the gut feel. Like, the Lance Lynn thing was a gut feel. My gut feel for Sunday, I think Tyler Glasnow, who's ramping up the pitch count, it should get to about 80, maybe 85. He could perhaps touch 90 in this start against Toronto. Not the best ballpark for it. I'd rather see him be pitching in Tampa Bay in their extreme pitcher's park. But I kind of like the Glasnow matchup at Toronto as far as the Sunday matchups are concerned. I think I said this to you before, AJ. I liked your Rays pick, and part of it has to do with the fact that they've been getting very creative with their pitching strategies this year.
Yeah, they're a fun team to watch, and that game is going to be interesting to see if Stroman can make the start as well, because he was warming up yesterday and had a blister during the start, and it was earlier this week. And I'm like, so I don't know. He says he's going to make the start. I'm not sure if he will.
Sunday Night Baseball is a great matchup here. I'm looking forward to this one. It is Matt Scherzer at Cole Hamels as the Nationals take on the Cubs at Wrigley Field. Yeah, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball facing one who has had a great track record over the years and has pitched quite well. Cole Hamels 2-0 with the Cubs after Monday's game of 6 innings of 1-run ball. Granted, didn't miss a lot of bats, only 2 Ks, but Hamels is doing pretty well so far as a Cub. And I want to draw this back in here since Kyle stopped by earlier. He did put this in the note. It's a really good question. He asks to shuffle up and deal with the newly acquired pitchers. Lance Lynn versus Cole Hamels versus Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting thing. They've all done fairly well in their new environments, have they not? I think I like Cole best of the bunch there. I think Hamels is doing a really nice job. I would probably put Eovaldi second simply for the run support there and Lynn third, but to your point, the schedule for Lynn coming up, if he gets through Texas, you know, to have those Rays who are fun to watch but don't necessarily string together a lot of runs, the Marlins and the White Sox, I think Lynn could have the better August, but I think overall I would like Hamels 1, Eovaldi 2, Lynn 3.
Now, I kind of want to be on board with Cole Hamels as number one here, but I'm going to go with Eovaldi. I definitely see your point. There's kind of a safe factor with Hamels that isn't present with Eovaldi. But I'm just going to ride this. I like what I see from Eovaldi. I'm going to go Eovaldi 1, Hamels 2, and Lynn 3. And Lynn, by the way, he's got one of the most outrageously favorable schedules I've ever remembered from a Yankee pitcher within a month. The rest of August is just... I haven't seen anything like that in quite a while. So certainly I'm on board there. Well, that's your weekend schedule. The Monday games, just for a heads up in advance, a 1:35 game on Monday. So make sure you do set up your lineups in advance then, but we'll have all our previews of those games coming up on Monday. Let's get to the hash browns. Today they are brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rating hiring site in America. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Carabell. ZipRecruiter.com/Carabel. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Got to go get my giant jug of water after talking so much. I realized that with no designated hash browner today, I guess it's me. Oh, all right then. Let's sit back and relax. What do you say?
Sure, sure. Let the music wash over you.
Yeah. Da-da-da-da. Shall I serve up your first serving of hash browns, sir?
Please do.
Okay. The first plate of hash browns comes from Zach. J.D. Martinez turns 31 in less than 2 weeks, obviously having a great season, but considering that he has played 125 games in a season just once in his career, how do you rank him next to a budding star in 26-year-old Christian Yelich?
Ah, that's a very good question. You know, we should talk a little bit about how you decide to rank your players for dynasty purposes. You know, each year I do it in the preseason, and what I like to do is I like to take kind of a scaled view of the production that we project for the upcoming season, and then take a look at what their age is now, compare it to the league average age at the position, and kind of project out for a couple of seasons, and then like sum it all up. So prior to this season, my number eight outfielder in Dynasty format, J.D. Martinez. My number nine, Christian Yelich. So they're really close going into this season. I'm not sure that when I do this again in the preseason next year that I'm going to be changing things all that much right now. I still think that you have to wait the upcoming season more important than anything else there, because you got to win today. But they are very close, and probably one more year of age, and I think I'll be able to flip-flop the two.
So a year from now, you'd be more apt to put Yelich ahead.
Yeah, yeah. But I still I think the performance that Martinez did this year, it will, you know, out shown what I expected from him, so I'm certainly not going to suddenly put an extra year of regression on him for that regard. I think he can keep this going, or even just the projection we had for this year going for next year.
Yelich is a guy I like a lot, and I have for a while. He does a lot of things quite well, but nothing exceptionally. I think that there's going to come a time where something, either the hit tool or the power, is going to become exceptional. But we're just sitting here and waiting. And yeah, he's 26. Zach, to your point, you said 26. I mean, he's been in the majors a good amount of time, and he has not shaved the ground ball rate beneath 50%. That's a problem. The hard contact rate is up significantly. Career high 47% this season. His career rate in the majors is 37. So he is doing very well in that, but is having some good fortune on balls in play. I would expect that a little bit in that ballpark. The guy's got to start getting some more loft on the ball. This is a classic needs-to-be-a-launch-angle experiment guy during the offseason. And if he doesn't do it, I can't see how he matches Martinez. And, AJ, I'd be with you that at the start of next season, I'm going Martinez. I also don't feel it's that close. I'd probably have him further apart.
It's not that close now. I mean, it's 8-9, but there is a tier there, certainly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would not be surprised if I even have like a Byron Buxton or Manuel Margot ahead of Yelich next year, based on their age and development that I expect them to do, which, to your point, Yelich has not yet done.
I think this is the kind of thing where if I'm every time I'm in a dynasty or a keeper league, the first thing I think of is the price points. Yelich is probably going to end up having been cheaper to acquire, and you will have him locked in at a lower rate. And if it's significantly lower, by all means, I'm going to go ahead and make a case for him. But otherwise, I think it's Martina. Yeah, you win now. All right. Let's get play two of Hash Browns. Play two comes from Ed. He wasn't listening earlier in the show and wants to challenge us on one of our rankings on Kyle Freeland. He'd like to know, is Freeland's ability to limit his homers, 9.6% homer to fly ball rate this season, a skill or luck that is destined to run out?
I don't think it's too out of line with his previous year numbers and the home road split in terms of home run fly ball rate. You know, you'd expect it to favor more home runs and cores just because. And I'm not seeing this as skill or luck. I just think it is what it is. He's also given up a lot more fly balls. So even though the rate is low, the output is not lower. So you have to take that into account as well.
I'm in agreement. He's given up a lot more fly balls. He has a much greater strand rate, left on base percentage, however you want to call it. The BABIP is lower. A lot of the luck numbers say that it's not necessarily sustainable. The walk rate isn't elite. K rate is far from elite. And not only that, there's nothing here that shows his stuff has improved significantly. Yeah, the fastball is performing better, but it's not as fast. Slowed down a little bit this year. Feels mirage-ish. Feels like luck. And I think I'm almost 100% on that side. I'll credit this guy for a good year, but I think it's luck.
Yeah, I just can't get behind, like, you know, I don't like the word luck, you know, more than anything else. I think, you know, are you lucky if your defense stinks, you know, or unlucky, you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's the control that a pitcher has over the outcomes. I think, you know, that's why we have FIP and XFIP. And so I don't necessarily think that luck is a thing here. I think he's pitching to the maximum of his ability, to your point there. And so in that regard, I think that is a skill, but to pitch to the maximum of your ability.
Are we ready for plate number three? Hopefully you're not full yet.
Hang on, sip of water first. Sip of water.
Yep. Okay. See, I'm sneaking those in. You know, I talk too much. I got to shut up. Plate three comes from Nathan. Easy come, easy go. For Max Muncy, do I need to consider moving on from him with the recent power outage and a season batting average that has fallen some 20 points since the beginning of July?
Tristan, are we looking at a case of the home run derby curse?
No! No!
Yeah, a 183 batting average in the second half is just, it's not good. Not good at all. No. you know, I chalk it up to, you know, when was the last time that he's been a player with this much expectation of playing time on him? The answer is never. He could just be tired. It's a long season, but this is especially a long season for a guy who's never had more than 150 plate appearances in a season before. I think we're just seeing fatigue more than anything else. And while I don't necessarily think he's going to rebound this season, I don't write him off for next year by any stretch of the imagination.
Wow, that K rate is through the roof in August.
Oh, it's awful.
Now, granted, I mean, it's 17 PAs and 10 Ks, so it's like the smallest of small samples. But, I like your theory on this. And I'm putting you in the timeout chair for coming up with the the derby
curse. Someone was going to bring it up on Twitter if we didn't. Come
I
on.
Know. Oh, jeez. Curses are all real, everybody. I just want to be very clear on that. You know where I always go with this, AJ. They're totally clear, and I'm completely kidding, but they're totally clear. Do you know what the home run derby is about, people? It's regression to the mean. That's all it is. These guys are in the home run derby because they had awesome first halves. Most often, they're going to regress to the mean themselves within that first period of time right after the All-Star break, especially the second half. It's shorter than the first half. It's especially shorter than the first half this year. And AJ, to your point, yeah, he might be tired, and maybe the derby's participation and the All-Star game's participation did tire him out a little bit. I get it. I still think he's going to have a somewhat productive final 6 to 8 weeks of the season. I don't know that they're going to be great. I'm not excited about him for next year. But he's probably going to have some utility.
Yeah, we don't know what that team's going to look like next year. Let's be
honest. Yeah.
I mean, who's going to play second base? It could be him.
Muncy might have the appropriate level of regression in his stats that Chris Taylor is suffering from last year to this. It's not devastating, but it's there. It's present. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, do we dare a fourth? Anthony, do we dare a fourth plate of hash browns? Or are we getting...
Let's do it, boys. I'm still hungry.
Gluttonous here? All right. Let's take one from McPhee. Jurickson Profar is having himself a nice season. Is he someone you can trust ROS, rest of season, this season, end in 2019?
I like Jerickson. I like Jerickson a lot. You know, I did an article on Monday about the players who you can get production from all five categories that is somewhat above average. And yeah, he's not exactly like a speed demon by any stretch of the imagination on the base path, but he will steal the occasional base for you. He'll hit some home runs for you. He'll drive in runs and he'll hit for a respectable average, certainly above the league average there. So he's not a guy I'm going to put, draft in the top five, six rounds. But at this point of the season for middle infield spot, even corner spot, yeah, he can play anywhere.
Yeah, the multi-eligibility has been very good. The other thing, too, is when he and the Rangers face a lot of lefties, I know that he constantly comes up in the forecaster formula as a great play for the heavy lefty weeks. Has good numbers against them. It's a good year, and I think he's a good player, and I've always felt he's a good player, but this guy's range of outcomes expanded to among the widest of any youngster out there when he dealt with the major injuries early in his career. And you know, AJ, this is going to sound crazy, but just follow along with where I'm going here. When I look at his skill set, with his contact rate, with the ability to have a little pop and to steal some bases, this looks like a skill set that is not unlike a potential Jose Ramirez a few years down the road. The skills are similar.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying this for a long time, and yeah, he started very young. So, you know, it feels like he's a lot older than he is. But yeah, you just look at the last month in terms of even, you know, his eye at the plate with 13 walks and 10 strikeouts. That's darn impressive, especially from a guy who is, in the past, I felt was more of a swing for the fences type feel to him. I take your point there. Could he be ready for one of those huge breakouts? Every year I put him at the top of these rankings, and I'm waiting for it. I haven't seen it yet, but hopefully.
Mm-hmm. He's still young enough to do it. That was something I've been reminding for a while, and I'm not trying to say he's going to be the next Jose Ramirez, but that outcome, I think, is within the slim range of possibility here. The problem is the floor is probably as a major injury setback next year, and that's it. That's bye-bye. That's a career.
Yeah, it's that floor, and it's also the floor that, you know, we've been waiting for Texas to get him in there every day.
Right.
They'd much rather send him to AAA than do so at times, so...
Where does he play next year? That's the thing. I mean, we're going to see how this plays out. Adrian Beltre, his future, reaching the near the end of his career. Is there going to be a position that opens up for Profar in time? I'll tell you, when we mentioned Max Muncy a minute ago. When I look at Profar, I think Profar's skill set and situation is a little bit more interesting to me for 2019 today, but I can completely envision the scenario where Muncy is clearly the better draft pick. Maybe not so,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah, but then again, it's also your format, because I think in a points league, I think Profar will do much better for you because he's not saddled by that ridiculous strikeout rate.
Hash brown plate number 5. Is this the worst voice I've ever brought to this show? All right, we got to wrap it up before I send this completely off the rails. It's my kind of weekend, AJ. It's National Lazy Day on Friday, and it's National Bowling Day on Saturday. And Kyle put a little note in here. Since Kyle stopped in, we got to give him credit for his top score for a researcher at 257. 257 is bowling score. Hey, Kyle, I got you. I had that 279.
How many games? How many games did it take?
Like 7.
Yeah.
Not really. No, I actually did bowl one of those once, but it was one of those, you know, you ever one of those ones where it's like, oh, I'm in the zone for this one game, and then the next game you throw is a 112. You ever have that happen?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I when I was a teenager, I bowled in a league. My father could have turned pro at one point. He's got a few 700 series under his belt back in the day. So yeah,
700. Wow, that's trophy.
700 series. Bowling's in my blood.
Excellent. What's your high score?
Yeah, it's been a while. I maxed out around 230.
230. Anthony, what's your high score?
Are we talking bumpers or no bumpers? My high score, I want to say, is maybe 120. Not a great bowler.
Okay. That's fair. But you have fun with it. Kyle says on this one anyway, tweet a picture if you beat that score of Kyle's 257 on Saturday. You got to tweet a picture of beating it, and he'll get your 06010 MLB hash brown. Remember, always tag the 06010 MLB for hash browns. We'll get it read on Monday. Anyway, thank you, AJ, of course, for joining us all this week. Definitely appreciate that. Good stuff as always. Thank you, Anthony, for all you do behind the glass, making all this stuff work. And thank you to you, the listener, for tuning in today. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.